Welcome to Season 7 of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast. This is where we chat with experts in the field, patients who use these devices, physical therapists, and the vendors who make it all happen. Our goal? To share stories, tips, and insights that ultimately help our patients get the best possible outcomes. Tune in and join the conversation. We are thrilled you are here and hope it is the highlight of your day.
Hello, everyone. My name is Joris Peels, and this is another episode of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright. How you doing, Brent?
Doing well, man. You know what's crazy, man? People actually listen to us. We've been listened to in over 80 countries, and over 40% of that is outside of the United States. And I just think that's an amazing story to tell. And a special thanks to our listeners as well. And you've got some other news.
I'm really proud and happy to say that we have a sponsor for this show, and it's Vorim. So Vorim is like an end-to-end kind of software solution, anything from tool pathing software to carving to, you know, any kind of solution that, you would need to for an end-to-end tools and OMP professional. So, and yeah, they also offer scanning, right? They have like scanning solutions, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's one of the neat things about what Vorim's doing is that is not only with the end to end, you know, scanning is such a foundational part of what we do. It is the foundation of what we do. You get a bad scan, you're going to have a bad end product. And one of the things that they've released is this Luma 3D scanner. And it is an end-to-end solution, but you can do all your digital landmarking. You can clean things up. You can pause and resume scans. You can put patient data on there. And you can also, you know, it goes to a Windows Surface Pro, or you can put a tether on it for those kind of weird-to-reach places or underneath a foot or what have you. So you can actually not have to have it on the screen itself, which is pretty interesting, because there's some other options out there that use like an iPad or even the iPhone. But you talk about getting into a weird angle without a tether, that's what happens. And so I think it's really neat what they've done. And just watching some of the videos of how you can clean up the scans and such has been really, really, really neat.
Okay, good. I like this, dude. It seems like a, you know, integrated solution, scanner, software, cleaning up kind of stuff, plus your workflow from one vendor. So, you know, that if that's all, you know, works together really nice, it's a beautiful way to not get any headaches and have one supplier for this key element of obtaining that scanning information. So, yeah, sounds really good. Sounds really solid. And thank you so much for Vorim for sponsoring this episode.
All right. And this episode is special to me. And I wanted to give a little bit of context before we hop in almost to the middle of a conversation of what Joris and I had to say about creating access worldwide for people that need prostheses. Listen in.
Katie Leatherwood, mm-hmm. who we've had on the show, mm-hmm. That lives in Latvia, has been there for a while, came and visited us not only East Point, but Advanced 3D. Uh-huh. And we just had a great discussion. And, you know, it really led me to think, like, there's obviously multiple ways to reach people, right? But what's interesting is that Katie is, unlike many other orthotists and prosthetists, she actually lives in Latvia and has since 2018. And so she set her roots up. She has a team that help her on the technical side of things, but then also travel where she can't travel as an American. But then she has also taken the time to do the things the right way. So she has a nonprofit that's established in Latvia, also has a nonprofit in the U.S., but then she also has a for-profit prosthetic place in Latvia as well. And I think she's doing a very nice job kind of melding the two. And, you know, I know we've talked about this before, but, I think it would be interesting to talk a little bit more about it.
So just the idea of how to get everyone prosthetics. Something like that, or how to spread.
Yeah. Okay, so how do we do it? Do you do it with nonprofit? Do you do it with business? Is it going to mix of both with Life Enabled? And then we've had some other people on, like Jeff Aronstone from Operation Namaste. Katie.
Yeah.
We had Paul on from Lev Legacy, you know, all those. I think it'd be an interesting discussion.
Okay, that's cool. We can do that. But okay, so first off, let's just talk to a couple of scenarios. I think the first thing, let's call this the integrated scenario, what Katie's doing. This idea, I have a nonprofit for, I guess, the poorest or the people that can't be reached, right? I also make a practice to build capacity in the country, and I live in the country. And I love this very much. And I think it's a really good, it's very dependent on one person though. It's her charisma and her work, life's work, if you will. And with these organizations, it's difficult for me to see, like, you know, if she falls away or she can't do this anymore, you know, who's she going to take to power that through? So there's a lot of capacity building, but there's also some organizational design. She has to find ideally like a young 20-year-old Latvian who's like going to make, you know, going to carry that forward to the generation. So that's a very, like every small business, you know, small business has to have, okay, it's the family maybe, but there has to be people in that organization to carry it forward. I think it's very people dependent, that kind of approach. So it may be very limiting, but it can be very long lasting if it's done right.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an interesting way to put it. And I think, you know, what you said and Katie's, she's younger than me. So youngish. And she is really investing into local people. And so like this idea of, and I think she even used it, like, what happens if I get hit by a Mack truck? Those are real decisions.
The chance of that happening in Europe is very little, very low. But if right, she would get hit by a Volvo truck or a Renault, that chance is much higher.
Well, and just the nature, I mean, Latvia is very safe, but there's, you know, around that conflict area, there are other things that could happen. So who can carry that torch? And so that's an important discussion to have. And I think she's really having that discussion. So that's what makes me excited about that sort of thing. So I like this integrated model. You know, let's talk a little bit about so that's the integrated model, right? So then, you know, what are some other options? You've got the complete nonprofit realm. And let's just go.
Well, let's go to the other nonprofit. The other one is the airdrop prosthetics realm.
That's a good one.
You know
one.
What
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like we come and we like make some video and stuff. Everybody takes a 2-week vacation, and I think there's some examples of this really working. And I've seen some. I'm going to have to anonymize this because I've seen some examples of these people raising money to go, and then they raise like money, and then most of it is like plane tickets for them. And they get a whole bunch of pictures taken with smiling children, and the effectiveness is really low. That's a one like bad example. I also know that there's like these what are these eye surgeons and stuff? They have like a plane outfitted with complete surgery and everything, and they go, and it's also their free time, and that seems really effective because it's a procedure. You walk in, do it, boom, and all of a sudden you don't have a cataract or whatever, right? So I think those are the two extremes of that kind of the vacation model, right? Where you're parachuting in there, you're doing something where one is, it's not effective because it's way too expensive, right? The plane ticket is $1,500 and then you're giving $500 worth of goods to people. And the other one is a super effective, like you're taking these really amazing surgery people and they're it's only 2 weeks, but they'll do 1,000 patients in whatever country, right? And I think with orthopedics, there's this aftercare thing, and that always kind of really makes this model for me a really, really problematic.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And you know, one thing that we didn't talk about with what Katie's going on, it's like for the prosthetic market, you know, people are changing all the time. They're losing weight, gaining weight. Mm-hmm. They might have had, you know, a few extra tortillas, you know, some salty beans in their beans and rice, which makes them retain fluid. And then all of a sudden they're bigger and they can't get into their prosthesis. So having somebody local that can actually lead them through that, because it's a journey of this fluctuation, because you've got a real live human that their body's changing all the time into something that doesn't change. We can go into that another time because I think that's part of the sockets is, there should be some opportunity for these things to change, and people self-manage that. So, but what Katie, one interesting thing that Katie had done is she has her people that take care of some of the follow-ups and make sure that everything's going well. But she also will do like video follow-up calls on a very frequent basis. And so this one guy who was in the Ukraine, said, hey, I'm up to 10, they're called ply of socks, two socks, very thick. Well, that's a known dimension. And she goes, not a problem. I'm going to reduce the socket file that you currently have, 3D print it. Mm-hmm. And then when my guy is back there next week, he's going to take it and put it on you.
Love it.
And sure enough, it happened. And so this idea of follow-up care, you have to talk about follow-up mm-hmm. care when mm-hmm. you're talking about the prosthetic mm-hmm. And orthotic field. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the parachute in model, mm-hmm. not great. And one thing that mm-hmm. is very interesting, and this is what I tell people when they're looking at nonprofits to donate to or whatever, is if there's a bunch of, if go to their social media, go to their mm-hmm. website, if it's a bunch of pictures mm-hmm. and no video, bad news.
Love it. Yep.
If there's no video, yeah. that means there's no outcomes. Yeah. There might be smiling people, but they're not wearing their prosthesis. So, yeah. Video does not lie. Okay. And so, you know, that's just a little hint for people that, you know, hey, who do I donate mm-hmm. to if I want to mm-hmm. help a mission or whatever mm-hmm. of prostheses,
yeah.
you want to do one that does a lot of video.
Okay. And then another approach we could talk about is the local manufacturing. So that to me is like, it's kind of what Katie's doing, but then you would just focus on either one of the smorgasbord options. You don't have to do everything at the same time, but you would then, of course, try to make as much as possible in that country, right? And that could be like the people are making things out of wood again with a lathe because that's what they have. You know, that could be very radically different prosthetics than we're used to, but maybe they can be made super duper affordable.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's interesting. And I was, that's where I was really surprised when at this last AOPA mm-hmm. with the Hope to Walk people. Mm-hmm. They literally are using the same casting tape, fiberglass casting tape that you use to break your arm, or, you know.
Yeah.
So it's the casting tape, and they're using that to make a prosthesis. And they actually take an oak dowel and slide it through a PVC pipe yeah. as the pipe that attaches to the foot, uh-huh. and that is actually testing better than the pylons that we use here in the U.S. Yeah. because they're a little bit dynamic. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to break.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, you know, that take on it. But I think where people make the mistake, though, mm-hmm. is they focus too much on that, this idea of locally sourced materials. Mm-hmm. And they say, hey, we're providing jobs and that sort of thing because they're sewing our leather. And I'm like, you know, you're not delivering that many prostheses. So it might take them like maybe an hour. Mm-hmm. to sew up all these leather straps and put some stuff together. So you're not really giving somebody a job. I mean, it's more of a talking point, mm-hmm. but to another end of that is like, if you actually put them on payroll, right. Mm-hmm. And teach them mm-hmm. how to make these devices, how to fit these devices. That's when you level up and then allow those people to teach another people. And then that's a way to scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really exciting. But that, I mean, I think that really requires, you couldn't do this in 6 months, you know? You that would require like you relocating essentially. Just like what Katie did. So you would have to like literally live there for a number of years. And in order to find someone to pass the baton on who's local, I think, which is still, I don't think the scenario should ever be 20 years from now, like we import a new Canadian every 6 months, you know, or you know what I mean? I think the idea of capacity building and them doing the manufacturing themselves should actually be them doing everything. And especially if we're talking about super poor countries where this kind of the infrastructure part of it is really, really different. And then another thing I want to point out is, of course, it's like I think we should talk about this, is like the countries are all very different. You know, whether you go into Bolivia, which is they have very remote areas. Some of the areas are really poor, but there's also giant cities and it's also quite connected to the world. Or where you go into some mega remote jungle area or a mega remote or a country that's, you know, South Sudan or something like that's going to be a lot more difficult, you know. Car or Congo is going to be, you know, the operating scenario. You know, Bolivia is already going to be tough, I think, for a lot of people, compared to the stuff, the comfort level you have in the States and all the stuff is going to be different. But if you all of a sudden translate that same model that could work really well in Bolivia, then you go to Congo, yeah, good luck, you know?
Well, and that's so true. And I think that's also important. Like when the war broke out in Ukraine and all that stuff, mm-hmm. all these prosthetists were like, oh, we can make them prostheses. Mm-hmm. you know, they didn't realize that Ukraine is a first world country.
Yeah.
Like, this is not developing world. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go for your wooden pylon, mm-hmm. wooden foot mm-hmm. thing. It's just not that, it's not the right thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then you have, in the various areas where, mm-hmm. You know, going to the bathroom or, is a squatting over a hole in the ground. Yeah. Well, you can't use the foot that I use
yeah.
because it doesn't have the range of motion to get into a
really?
Squat.
Oh, wow. That's a huge problem in large parts of Asia, large parts of also 100%. Eastern Europe as well. But yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So you've got to think about that as far as, okay, so what are they actually going to do? And then, you know, you go into like a Middle East area and cosmesis is everything. How does it fill out the apparel to make it look like they have mm-hmm. Two legs and that sort of thing, or even the arm stuff. And so you're right. It's different for every single one. And so anybody that is saying they have the answer, mm-hmm. they don't have the answer, okay. you know, and you have to enlist mm-hmm. Local help to kind of figure that out or come alongside of them to help figure it out mm-hmm. And not try to mm-hmm. Fit the square peg in the round hole.
No, definitely. I think, and also like local solutions with local people, not just, I think it's really like that white man's burden kind of stuff, that really kind of like horrible attitude where you know everything better and you just come in like, ah, this is it. No, you don't know everything better. You've just been there for 2 weeks. You don't even know how to, like, you know, you can't even navigate the place properly. And all of a sudden you're telling everybody just because you're from like a richer country that you know everything better than that person, you know? I think that,
right. And I think that's a big time struggle, and it is a struggle. And you know, people want the funding, right, or the access, mm-hmm. and so they kind of sometimes go just along with it just to get that.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you have two people communicating two different things with expectations in the two different ways, and it can just be a disaster. Mm-hmm. So,
but what about if we?
That's definitely something.
And what about if we like separate the problem into two? Because this is like, you know, your iPhone, not this one, maybe. Well, this one kind of, right? But is going to be a 3D scanner. But the Comb app, we've seen how that kind of works now for a lot of people. So imagine we could just, like, it's iPhone 17 or something, right? And we've got, like, the Comb Plus or something like that. And works even better than it does now. And the cleanup is even better than it does now, all that. You know, can we have a model where you're just like, you take Bob. Bob's a local dude. He doesn't have to be trained. You give him an iPhone. You just say, scan all the people. Is that a thing? Can we do that? And then you're like in North Carolina or whatever, and you're like going to make these things and then send them over. Can we do this? Is that a feasible thing, do you think?
I think so. And it's not just, and I don't think it has to be a random person. Mm-hmm. So like one of the interesting thing is, you know, medical centers exist everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so there's nurses, doctors, mm-hmm. That are interacting with patients that know the anatomy and such that love technology, mm-hmm. you know, and I think about the orthopedic surgeon that wants to print his own medical models, mm-hmm. right? Why not train that guy mm-hmm. to take some scans mm-hmm. or he can train some nurses or what have mm-hmm. you, but maybe he's the main guy mm-hmm. to take scans and send them to, you know, an area to be produced mm-hmm. so that you're not having to learn, okay, mm-hmm. another whole software. And maybe that's part of the mm-hmm. journey. It's like you take that burden off for a little bit, get them really good at scanning. Mm-hmm. And then, hey, now we're going to take you through the journey of modifying so you can do it right there. And then the follow-up mm-hmm. is now you're going to be able to do it, everything mm-hmm. to your 3D printer. Mm-hmm. And then what I want you to do is then show somebody else, maybe in another country mm-hmm. or in the city down the road, to do the same thing.
Yeah, I think that would be really exciting. And also the print locally thing as well. But maybe use the Americans' expertise to make the prosthetic because they don't have enough prosthetists there. Because we know that that's a huge problem with these. And then we partially print them on site. And we maybe have a local prosthetist who now, you know, and with much less time, doesn't have to do all the work, you know? And they can just fit, like, I don't know, 10 people a day instead of 2 people a day, you know?
Yeah. Well, and so this really resonated with me. It was about 6-7 years ago. I had a doctor who was from India. Mm-hmm. Her dad had just had an amputation mm-hmm. and had been to all the prosthetists or, you know, prosthetists or people that made prostheses around his city. Mm-hmm. And he still was not walking. And she goes, Brent, is there anything that you can do? And so I took her, and this was before scanning. So mm-hmm. I took her and showed her how to take a reasonable cast. And she brought that back to me, and I actually made it. And then she ended up taking it to back to India to fit her dad. Mm-hmm. Pretty much all set up. We had the measurements and all that stuff. And she FaceTimed with me, mm-hmm. and we got the alignment right. And then her dad was as happy as could be.
That's crazy. And so I love this. Wait a minute. I love this. It's so simple, dude. This is
it's totally possible. That's all I'm saying is to be able to use the expertise from other areas if you're outkicked your coverage essentially. Yeah. And it was a simple phone call, a video call, and I mean the technology is way better now. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason why that can't be done.
Okay. I like that. That's very helpful because I think that we're using cell phones, the internet, all this technology to connect us. And I think that gives me a lot of hope that we could do at least part of this kind of information value exchange, like online. I think it would make everything way, way cheaper and way more scalable as well. Like make it much bigger.
Well, and you alluded to it, mm-hmm. you know, for me to hop on a plane to go to India, yeah. I have to leave my, you know, for one patient, mm-hmm. say if I was to go see her dad mm-hmm. or whatever. And let's just say I saw 10, you know, which is a lot of work for a week. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm into that for $2,000 mm-hmm. probably. I'm eating and food mm-hmm. and hotels, you know, maybe another $1,500 mm-hmm. and then the pieces and parts mm-hmm. for all that. Mm-hmm. And I've left my practice for a week, mm-hmm. And the design stuff, like all that, mm-hmm. you know, it's a fairly big sacrifice all the way around. Mm-hmm. So that the end price of that one prosthesis,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's going to be $15,000. But with her going back and forth, she's already seeing her dad. We're mm-hmm. working together. Mm-hmm. We were literally into it for probably less than $500.
Super nice. I love this, dude. This is really good. I like that. I like that example very much. Because yeah, you can take a lot. Yeah, a cast seems like this seems like not a really insurmountable thing to do. And this is actually also how all these hearing aids, like millions of 3D printed hearing aids, they get made. And it's like a custom wax impression of your ear that goes in a box, and that gets scanned in another country. And that file is then used to make they customize the electronics inside of it. They look at the software and be like, oh, this is the electronics go this way. This is better for this one. And they print it out and then they send the thing to the people. So that's like, you know, and that's being done like tens of millions of times. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting. I mean, a lot of people, and I think that I think it's something to be achieved, but they look at, you know, hearing aids and a dental, mm-hmm. you know, as a great, as parallel to the prosthetic realm. But I would say too, though, is those are dimensions that don't change, right? Mm-hmm. Your teeth and gums and your same thing with your ear stuff. You can be pretty close mm-hmm. and you're going to still have a result that's mm-hmm. reasonable. But this is also where it's exciting for 3D printing mm-hmm. because we have materials that we've never had to use before. So I believe, mm-hmm. and this is just through, we've had Richard on, remember the marathon guy mm-hmm. where we used his same shape that was not working for him to run the marathon or to even train, mm-hmm. but we changed the materials yeah. and now he ran a marathon. Mm-hmm. So I think you have that opportunity in 3D printing mm-hmm. where you have some materials and we've talked about air pockets mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, even with FDM mm-hmm. where even if they have some variability, flexibility, you have some protective mechanisms that are automatically built in that it is maybe a suboptimal prosthesis, mm-hmm. but because we're using these technologies to their fullest extent, mm-hmm. we're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting. But then can we make, is there a universal fitting? Like, you know, these boa clips, you know, I'm obsessed with them, but can we use them to make one prosthetic that'll fit everyone? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? That we have like a prosthetic and then you just adjust the screws to telescope the middle bit out and up and you can, you know, make everything bigger and smaller. Is that a conceivable thing? Kind of like a IKEA prosthetic that could deal with like a lot of people or?
I think it's an interesting thing and I think it's something that we should strive to, but I'll never forget, you know, we had that David Boone on and he touched on how all the surgeries are different.
Yeah.
Right. So every solution is different and everybody talks to the prosthetist about how, well, you don't have a good fitting prosthesis. Well, no, you did a bad job doing the surgery. Mm-hmm. And so we have that situation too, where all these surgeries mm-hmm. are not consistent. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of that is many of these surgeries are due to people, dysvascular disease, diabetes, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so if you automatically give them something like a boa or something, mm-hmm. they don't have feeling a lot of times in their legs. So it could actually be worse for them. Yeah. So this is where having these air cushions and that sort of thing, I call it kind of like, oops, like, okay, the prosthetist may not be that good and the patient's not mm-hmm. very compliant. Well, if we use the right materials, we might still have good outcomes.
That's okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get it now. I think I get it now. I think it's a good point. I think that it kind of increases your safety factor, your comfort factor, just by having a lot more better material. I think that's a good point. I didn't realize that. I think I'm really, really happy you made that. But okay, how about this? The great big library of prosthetics. So we take everybody's old prosthetics, we put them together, and then we scan everybody else who needs one, and we match them up. Then your prosthetic twin gets your old prosthetic, and they're exactly the same size. You have exactly the same thing. Now, something.
Well, sometimes it's not far from that. Mm-hmm. We actually last year had a guy. He was this is hilarious. Mm-hmm. He was a left above the knee amputee. Yeah. Saw a right above the knee amputee leg on eBay. Yeah. Bought it, chopped it up a little bit. And he was walking around on it. What? It was suboptimal, but I think it does point to the resilience of people and people's tolerance, right? Yeah. People want to be up and walking. Mm-hmm. So I always hate the saying, well, you know, it's enough, mm-hmm. but a lot of times, especially with the 3D printing and scanning and things like that, I think we can get a lot closer to enough and be comfortable and have a good outcome rather than these suboptimal, like kind of what you talk about, this library and we match you up mm-hmm. close. I mean, this guy took a right and made or a left and made it a right mm-hmm. or the other way around and was doing okay.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a little bit of room between a very well-fitting socket and somebody taking the wrong side and putting it together. I think that there can be a very happy medium where it's good enough mm-hmm. and you're off to the races.
Okay. I think that's a really good approach. And I think, you know, are we seeing also like another thing we have to discover, is there a lot of DIY stuff, like stuff I'm triggered a little bit by this woman doing the casting herself, you know. Can we put a lot more work in by the person that needs this prosthetic? If they're going from having nothing to getting something good enough, can we have like a more DIY kind of a thing? The thing where they're more involved in the making process, the thing that where they do part of the work, you know, because, hey, I would do that. If my option is like, I have to do part of the work or I'm not walking, then, hey, I'm going to be like, you know, I'll take your online class. You know what I mean? I'll do it. Is that something you would believe in as well? Or?
I think 100%, you know, and I think, you know, when we talk about like scanning and that sort of thing, or even the casting, I mean, casting material is available anywhere, in the world. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's definitely some options, there. And I think the other thing is that there are some people kind of coming down the line that are using, instead of photogrammetry, they're using like this videogrammetry, which it doesn't really matter what mobile device you're using. Mm-hmm. And so almost a lot of people have mobile devices, or at least they know somebody with a mobile device. Mm-hmm. And so that can make it more accessible into that DIY area as well. So I don't think that's far off. I think where you can really run down the rabbit hole is the rest of the stuff, the alignment, that sort of thing. So it's like, it's a whole package type of deal. Mm-hmm. So you've got this fitting, and then you've got, how does it fit in 3D space? Mm-hmm. How is the person walking? Mm-hmm. Is it tall enough, short enough, that sort of thing. But, absolutely. I think that is a very interesting take. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But then, okay. But imagine we had a really good 3D scanner, right? Big 3D scanner. And we traveled around like some, less than developed country. Let's say. And we did that. And then a week later, they come back, we print it, and they come back, we'd scan them again to see how the alignment's working, and we scan them again to see how they're walking. I mean, the only thing that really needs to be local is the scanning, if we can tell all of those things from the scanning, right? I mean, if we can get an accurate assessment from just the scanning or the video of the person or that kind of thing, then we can do all of the other stuff remote.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and here's the other cool thing mm-hmm. is, you know, we talked about some local supplies and all that stuff. I believe that these materials are getting good enough to where we're going to be able to print feet mm-hmm. and such. So you're going to be able to print the socket and the foot, mm-hmm. and then you just need something to connect the two.
Mm-hmm. And that could be like extruded aluminum or whatever. That could be
or whatever. It could be a piece of bamboo. Mm-hmm. I mean, bamboo is very strong. Mm-hmm. But I think so. A lot of people are like, "Well, Brent, you could then just print the whole thing from the top to the bottom." Mm-hmm. You can, which is called exoskeletal prosthesis. It's been around for forever. But you have zero alignment capability. So let's say you miss the alignment by just a few degrees and you print it all together. That's not good. And so being able to make a quick alignment change via a pipe or whatever is going to be your most effective way to go for the best outcomes. And so I wanted to make that clear too, because I actually take probably, you know, a message at least probably once a month about this idea of, oh, you could just print it all together. The people that print it all together have aligned everything first and then scanned it, which may be a great model to do, but they don't go straight into putting it all together. You're on mute.
Okay. So I take the patient first and then I align, or what's the difference?
Well, so you know how we talked about the pipe? Where you connect the socket to the foot and there's a pipe in the middle and you can actually change the alignment. A lot of people are like, well, why don't you just print it all together? Well, you without knowing what the patient's true alignment is, you can't print it all together. But what you can do mm-hmm. is say on their first socket, you have this alignment thing in, you dial in their alignment and they shrunk. Well, you can take their 3D socket down and then capture their alignment in a scan, and then you could 3D print it all together if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. But right out of the gate, it's literally like gambling. Okay. There's it's very unlikely that you're going to hit it.
Okay, that's good to know. I mean, I think, and then there's the other example. Okay, what if we just made? This is also always comes up when we talk about customization and 3D printing. What if we made 1,000 sizes of prosthetic? Right, with 1,000 sizes of this, can we do like a big library of standard things? Maybe it won't work for everyone, but it'll work for 30% of people. These 30% of people, boom, easy. You come in, you set a size 3 plus a size 5 plus a size 9, ta-da, you're done. So then we don't focus on making the custom solution for everyone. We just say like, okay, with these 100 sizes of each part, the 100 sizes foot, 100 sizes brace, 100 sizes whatever, we get 30% of the people. And we just need to take some simple measurements. And then these are the easiest low-hanging fruit dudes, and we just help them.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what you can do with transfemoral or above-the-knee prostheses, because you're only dealing with one bone, right? And typically it's a fairly easy surgery and such. And so there's a lot of truth to that, is you could have a small, medium, and large left and right. Mm-hmm. and be good to go. So I mm-hmm. think that is definitely a really important option mm-hmm. For that. For the transtibials, you know, especially in the developing world, it's a whole nother thing, because you have traumatic amputees, congenital amputees, mm-hmm. these patients that have had diabetes, really terrible mm-hmm. you know amputee, like if there's so much variability mm-hmm. in the below the knee, I think it makes it more difficult. Now, with that being said though, is you could have some dimensions, and then there's materials now, like I think mm-hmm. like a part A, part B foam, mm-hmm. where you can pour it together, have them put their leg in there, and it kind of expands around their leg, and now it's custom.
Mm-hmm. And you can do that with polycaprolactone as well, to polycaprolactone heat fits to you, and these foams as well, then you can get, but that's, yeah, okay, you could do that as well. And then also like latex-like materials for the outside. Okay, that could be interesting.
Yeah. So I think, and there was one group that did that, something similar, but here's the other cool thing. And with the shapes and such, I believe that, if you have the right lattice structure or bladder size, or say if some of that's modular and you can kind of almost, you know how you can put the dots in the Crocs, in the holes of the Croc shoes, mm-hmm. you know, you put the little thing, mm-hmm. you could do something very similar mm-hmm. To that and get things to fit. And you could do that with FDM, and that would be very interesting. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes. But what would be great is to have a company mm-hmm. take some of their application engineers. They make this little passion project for them, like a company like, you know, a bigger one that has a bunch of resources, and they take it on as a passion project and mm-hmm. say, hey, over the next 2 years, this is what the results that we want to be. We're going to work on this. We're going to do a couple things and then you're off to the races.
There was a solution. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's something we've gone like kind of the NGO route and looked at this as a technological problem, right? But I remember at one point, but Enable, there were people selling this, when Enable is like donating these hands and stuff like this, there were people selling the Enable hands in Mexico for a couple $100. Right. So how about, this is a business opportunity, right? How about somebody saying, we are actually a startup that is going to bring prosthetics to the developing world. Do you believe in that kind of model? Like a pure commercial model. Somebody just saying like, you know what, we're going to have like my first prosthetic or something, like a low cost prosthetic, or we're going to open a whole bunch of clinics everywhere. Do you believe in that kind of thing?
I do. Like, I believe in definitely entrepreneurship. And you know, I think this is where it gets interesting and the semantics get very interesting. You have these NGOs mm-hmm. that, you know, a lot of them will say, hey, you can pay for your device and it will go and that money will go back into the business essentially. Mm-hmm. And then somebody else will walk. Mm-hmm. Or you have this thing. I mean, and a lot of people will call it like a social enterprise type mm-hmm. of thing where they're not trying to really make a profit. They're trying to cover their costs, but they're backed by, say, some investors. Mm-hmm. To me, it's one and the same. I mean, yes, it is commercial and that sort of thing, but investors, donors, the reality is a lot of these people do not have the money to pay full price for these things. So they're going to be subsidized in some sort of way. Mm-hmm. And that's just from what I've seen, right? I don't want that to be true. I'd love for it to be completely self-sufficient, mm-hmm. but I don't want to be naive enough to also on the same thing and say, oh, this is going to be self-sufficient, because the people that are missing limbs and such, these are not the people that are, you know, the wealthy of the wealth. They can fly to the US and go to the best prosthetist and get their stuff the way they need to, mm-hmm. which I don't necessarily agree with either, because they're going to have the same problem once they get back mm-hmm. in. They're going to change in size and such. And mm-hmm. so staying local is very important. Mm-hmm. So I think really the answer lies in somewhere in between. There's a hybrid model of like, you have somebody skilled enough that can take care of these mm-hmm. super high-end things, or maybe you do a clinic once a month or whatever, where you bring in a prosthetist from out of town or whatever mm-hmm. that allows you to help you learn and be on this journey of becoming a better prosthetist. But you take care of the high-end, the well, you know, things that can be paid, they're self-funded, that mm-hmm. sort of thing, and use some of that money then to pay for or subsidize these prostheses that are low cost, say sub $500 mm-hmm. or dollars or so. But you give somebody a job, mm-hmm. you give multiple people a job learning mm-hmm. this trade. So I think you can do that through the NGO. I think you can do it through a social enterprise. I think you just have to be super honest about mm-hmm. what is actually going on in the back end. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's so many times it's like going back to the photo ops and stuff. Well, we had this team come in, you know, there were 15 of them that mm-hmm. came in and they stayed at the best hotel and they flew first class mm-hmm. and all that. You know, it cost them $60,000 to get here. Mm-hmm. Well, that $60,000 goes a long way mm-hmm. in providing prostheses to people, mm-hmm. right? And they didn't really even have to come. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a balance mm-hmm. with any of that. But I love the idea of entrepreneurship and making it happen. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that what we've had issues with Life Enabled, and this is, you know, I talked to a bunch of people, but especially like in the area that we go, which is the jungle of Guatemala, mm-hmm. it's not, there's not a lot of people that love being up there. Mm-hmm. It's hot all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, and dusty, it has its own challenges with when the rain and all mm-hmm. that stuff comes. Everybody wants to go live in the city mm-hmm. where it's you know, the land of eternal spring. The coffee is amazing. You get up and it's 65 degrees and it may get to 80 degrees. Like, that is the life, right? And you have malls and Walmart and all that stuff. And so one difficult thing that we've had problem with is when you give somebody a skill that is in that other people want, right? They will leave and follow the money.
Yeah,
so we've had, we've had two clinicians that we've, you know, trained and the such that move to the city. I don't blame them for doing that. And luckily we've had other ones coming behind them, but now they're in a situation where they're talented, they're good enough, and they're making good money, but they've left the people they were serving, right? And for money itself. And so that's a difficult thing. And I don't fault them for doing it, but I think we also have to be, have a little bit of a reality check in is these skills are very valuable and they will be able to level up and, there's a chance that you will lose them.
Okay. All right. I think that's good. I think that's a good point. I mean, then the other approach, I think, which we also haven't considered is like, let's say the exoskeleton approach. I'm going to call it the exoskeleton approach. Like, you know, imagine the exoskeleton just becomes a product. So we get a productized technological solution for all the workers in the world to be able to work harder because everybody gets an exoskeleton, something like that, right? But there's other things that could do with this. You know, we can see this happening with robotics. We saw how quickly all these robotized vehicles are conquering or these electric vehicles are conquering the road. Not the cars, but all these other like wheeled vehicles and car and little bicycles and stuff like that. So do you believe that there's maybe a, you know, a technological solution that competes with that whole kind of like charity / orthotist driven stack, if you will, that there's just going to be some product. Buy this thing now.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. One interesting thing is, and like now that you brought this up and then we've kind of foreshadowed a little bit, but like in the northern part of Guatemala where we go, the hospital, which is a not-for-profit hospital, they will also let private surgeons come in and use their OR suite because they have endoscopy equipment.
Okay. Yeah.
So specialized equipment, right? And so these doctors are there pretty frequently because they're able to do these jobs very well. So it would be interesting to have something very similar in that sense of, say it's a nonprofit organization, it allows a prosthetist or whatever, or they could be a traveling prosthetist or what have you. Hey, we have this lab that's set up and, you know, for you to come and use it, you can come see your patient. But at the same time, we want you to see 10 of our patients. I don't know. Maybe that's a way that where you barter some of that skill or what have you, and it allows them access to technology that they would otherwise not have. And it gives us access to their skill that we would not otherwise have. I think it's a very interesting thought on that. And then how do we find those medical professionals that are going to stay in the area, that have family in the area, that are well established, that have an established practice? How do we get them to incorporate this into their clinics and take care of people? I think that's very interesting.
Or like, then there's another model, which is kind of analogous to this, is kind of closest. Imagine we do in Guatemala, in the jungle, we have a central fab, right? And the central fab makes stuff for America. These guys are getting paid well for Guatemala. They're laughing. They'll stay because they're getting much higher salaries than they get in the city. And the jungle, the living there costs peanuts, whatever. All right, so they're staying. They're doing all the manual labor stuff that the fabricator people do. And that gives us a cost advantage by shipping these things to America. And then meanwhile, with all, you know, 2 days a week, we're making low-cost prosthetics for Guatemalans for free. So then we have a hybrid, as in we're doing the fabrication in a low-income country or lower-income country. And then we're using that to actually like make, you know, skilled people a product for America as well.
So, and I love that idea. And I think that's a great, I had not considered that aspect of like, okay, so how do you make it, if they're following the money, well, how do you get them to follow the money to stay home, yeah, you know, essentially? So, and I think we've talked about this before, is the real key to any of this is mm-hmm. design. Mm-hmm. So if you can, if they have an internet connection mm-hmm. and you say, you set up some computers somewhere that, you know, they all have haptic devices and what have you, mm-hmm. and you set up central design right there in Northern Guatemala, mm-hmm. I think that you're onto something there mm-hmm. because now they can help me design the stuff mm-hmm. that I need for the U.S. Mm-hmm. They're also designing low cost prostheses mm-hmm. for, you know, the jungle of Guatemala mm-hmm. And, you know, Belize and Honduras mm-hmm. and all the surrounding countries. Mm-hmm. And they're getting paid well mm-hmm. to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think
it's great.
Yeah, but I like these kind of things because then you're like engineering a solution. It's not some like mega breakthrough. We don't have to change the world. We just have to give the right people the right incentives. And then all of a sudden, magically, it'll work, right? Maybe for whatever, two times minimum wage, the guy won't stay, but four times he will. And then it all of a sudden makes sense for us. And also for him, it's like, he's laughing all of a sudden at four times minimum wage in the jungle. Then he's like, bah, you know, whatever, I'll buy a house with a pool. Fine, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. I really like that. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot, yours.
Okay, yeah. Cool. I think that's an interesting exploration as well. But, and then the other thing is like, okay, we're looking at funding, right? So we haven't really considered funding because either NGO or commercial or some kind of mixed mash thing of it. But how about, the first one, I've always thought about this. I think everyone's thought of this. We sponsor them. Your knee is brought to you by Coca-Cola, and it says Coca-Cola on the knee. Yeah. Is that going to work? I mean, companies get involved with this, but they seem to be, you told me before, like I think it was offline. You told me like something about like they're more interested in the pictures, like, you know, do you think of that like you know, Lockheed makes 1,000 knees possible in some country. Do you think that is something, or do you think that's not going to be a sustainable thing? Or we really need a commitment from one organization or whatever?
I think it would be interesting. You know, I think if you could get enough of these corporates to take on specific mm-hmm. parts of it, like Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is everywhere, mm-hmm. right? So if they have Coca-Cola on their knee, mm-hmm. and it does, you know, it's bright red or whatever, and it's got Coca-Cola. Hey, that's good branding, advertising, all that stuff. And they're doing good things for people. Mm-hmm. I think I think another thing that would be very interesting is you get one of the polymer companies or what have you to be involved in the socket stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you have this, you know, whole complete mm-hmm. System mm-hmm. essentially that is brought to you by corporations mm-hmm. and, I think that's very interesting. I love that model. And I think touching on this idea of sustainability too, like mm-hmm. a lot of these companies have like endowment funds or trust funds or what have you, where, you know, they're donating based on the interest coming in. So mm-hmm. if you can get a commitment long-term, I don't care. That's sustainable. Mm-hmm. That's as sustainable as having, mm-hmm. you know, investors invest, you know, $1 million in the middle of, mm-hmm. you know, Uganda or something. Mm-hmm. But when that money runs out, it runs out. Well, no, at least you've got a little bit of a runway, you know, mm-hmm. with something like that. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Yeah, I would always worry about how long is their commitment? What do they want out of it? Will it fit? Are they just going to suddenly say bye, or are you going to do it 4 years, not the fifth? I think that would really worry me. I think in that sense, they'd be easy. Like I said, I think it's a good idea. The polymer idea. Like I could imagine if you get a BASF or somebody to keep donating one metric ton of this stuff, they're just going to do it forever. Cause like for them, whatever, this is great, great marketing, whatever, but if they need to keep finding the cash somewhere, I think maybe at one point you might be a little bit, you might have a little bit of a budgeting problem.
Yeah. Well, and this is where I think it would be interesting for a company to pick it up and do the kind of the initial mm-hmm. Project, so mm-hmm. like scope a project, and then where they're only, and then, you know, the end result is how do we make sure that all we're doing is we're not giving cash anymore. Mm-hmm. We're actually just donating material mm-hmm. or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. I think that would be very interesting.
Okay. And then the other model, I think you thought of this before, is this idea of like, you get a leg, you get like a plus one leg or something. So you tell like your person in the States, like, hey, pay $500 extra, and then we'll give you a leg to a person in Guatemala. That kind of idea of like, I know people that Toms try to do this. There's people trying to do this for shoes and all sorts of other things. Can we do this for prosthetics as well, where you just say to the people like, you know, for this amount, this other person will also get something or something like that. Another person in the same situation as you. Or I think,
yeah, and I think I would say that, I mean, especially in the U.S., that probably already happens. Mm-hmm. I would say most people probably go ahead and donate that. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting, and that's what's happened most recently, though, mm-hmm. is some of these companies, and we've talked to some companies that have had some pretty significant consolidation and such, and so they have some clinicians that they're willing to give time, mm-hmm. you know, to go somewhere mm-hmm. or be a part of a project. And so, like, we have a group going to the Ivory Coast, mm-hmm. And Bionic, Sagar, and we had Sagar and Tony on, said, hey, we've got two clinicians that would love to go with you guys, mm-hmm. and we're going to take care of their vacation time. We'll pay them while they're gone, you know, that sort of thing. And that is super cool. You know, you get this, you get another company kind of behind you, mm-hmm. and then they're going to donate some components and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. I think that sort of kind of social commitment where these companies are saying, hey, you can take the time, whether it's, you know, here local, or if you want to actually travel somewhere, and then that becomes sustainable where you can build some of these teams, even design teams, you know, that, because there's sometimes where I will take a file and I'll be like, you know what, I am so busy right now, I cannot crank this out. Can I send it over to you? And they're like, yeah, no problem. I'll fit it into my schedule. And then I get this file back and I haven't had to touch it. They feel good because they've helped. It's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is the one I think I've been sharing for last, because I think you're being least enthusiastic about it. But look, we have the AI-based super scanning Autobot prosthetist. You know, we take the prosthetist out of the loop. I could just scan using my phone, and then magical, the algorithms, all those super busy algorithms will design and maybe print or partially print this whole thing in an automated way. Is that, you know, I don't know if that's desirable, right? I think, you know, with alignment, back issues, whatever we want to be, but, you know, surely someone is going to do that eventually, something like this. AI based.
Well, so MIT had a project a while ago. They had this like fitting thing that had these like spring loaded things that came down and evaluated the tissue underneath and all that stuff. Yeah. You know, it was super cool. Right. I forget how much it cost. Mm-hmm. I mean, it died. I mean, the thing is like, there is a way to overcomplicate the prosthetic stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think you can maybe focus in the software side of things, but the bottom line is there has to be, at least right now, there has to be some sort of human interaction that can turn the screws, put stuff together, cut stuff, grind stuff, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. To really make a go at it. But I, you know, when I say all that, but the way some of this TPU stuff is going, maybe not. Maybe it's more like a shoe and some flaps and some mm-hmm. strings, you know, that go together mm-hmm. and kind of pull everything together. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be something worthwhile looking at.
Okay. Well, Brent, I thought this was a really great discussion. I think it was really wonderful. I hope we inspire people to think about this stuff in a broader way. I think I hope that was the thing. That's what I think would be nice for people to think about these angles and these different ways of thinking about this stuff. And yeah, it'll be really valuable, I think.
I think so too. I think it was a great discussion. It was eye-opening for me, you know, on some of this stuff. And I hope, you know, we can continue the discussion. I think the thing that we can agree on is it's a fragmented industry, which mm-hmm. is kind of silly to me. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got different people all over the world doing it different ways, and they won't talk to each other.
Yeah.
We gotta stop that.
No, that's a good idea. Just generally, like, figure out best practices from everywhere and everybody getting together on the same page, on at least, or finding other people that are doing the same approach. Like, even if it'd be valuable, everyone is a pure NGO people that only want to make wood lathe prosthetics, right? If those guys, all 20 of them or something, got together and said, we're going to make it all out of local hardwood or whatever, because that's how we are, and they learn from each other, I think that would be really valuable as well, if all those little different groups and factions got together, you know, let alone everyone agreeing on like one approach or one thing or one solution. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's important. And I think, you know, if you took all the NGOs mm-hmm. everywhere in the world, mm-hmm. I bet you mm-hmm. that they didn't deliver 10,000 prostheses last year.
Really? I have no idea. I don't know.
And there are over 35 million amputees.
Yeah.
Okay. So all that to say is we've got to be better, yeah. right? If we truly
yeah, but even if they did a million, even if they did a million, then it wouldn't really address the problem because then, like, by the time you got to everyone,
the problem, like, yeah. yeah. So everybody is fighting over whose idea is the best,
yeah.
and we didn't even touch 1% of people.
Yeah.
We didn't even touch 0.1% yeah. probably. Yeah. And so that is where I think the discussion needs to be, is how do we get all these people
mm-hmm.
on the same page? And that includes me. And, you know, mm-hmm. I was, you know, very much in the blinder mode, thinking that I'm doing things mm-hmm. the right way. And, but now I'm definitely much more open to mm-hmm. it. And I think 3D printing software and all that is going to be part of this. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what part.
I mean, I think it's a really interesting space. I think it's really great. I think it was a wonderful conversation, and I hope you enjoyed it very much for listening to us. And this is another Prosthetics and Orthotics podcast with Brent Wright and Joris Peels. Have a great day.